listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
What gets in the way of having the marriage that you want? What are the roadblocks? What are the ways that you get stuck? Today, we're going to explore five roadblocks to effective communication, the five roadblocks that get in the way of a loving and effective marriage. And really, as Annette, one of my coaches, will tell you, gets in the way of having a juicy relationship. Today, I'm joined by one of my top coaches, Annette Carpian. Annette and I will be discussing the things that get in your way, the roadblocks, the obstacles. This is about the five roadblocks to a loving and effective communication for a juicy relationship. Join me as I discuss that with Annette. Annette, thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited to talk with you. I'd like to pick your brain a little bit. The place I want to start with this is, what do you think it is that everybody wants out of a marriage?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on your show, Lee. You know, I'm only going to speak right now about our emotional longings, because I think that's most relevant to, you know, what we'll be talking about. You know, we all want to feel loved, to feel very valued and cared about. And we want to feel appreciated, you know, that all that we're doing for our life together, to really be noticed. We want to feel supported. You know, we want to feel like we're on the same team and that we're working towards common goals and, you know, kind of a common vision. And most specifically, you know, we want to be understood. We want to be heard. You know, we want our concerns validated. You know, maybe not necessarily agreed with. Sometimes we would like that, but at least to know, you know, that the other person really gets us and gets what's so for us. I think those are some of the most important, you know, emotional longings that we have.
Those are very interesting, because they really are that place of feeling important to somebody, of feeling involved, connected with someone, being a we, as I've talked about, and really having that sense of being in it together. So that's what we want. What gets in the way of that?
So many things. You know, first of all, there's, and I'll just, you know, briefly say, you know, just the circumstances of life and that demand our attention and our resources. You know, early on in a marriage or a relationship, you know, there's mostly the focus on each other and all the time we spend together. But as everyday life sets in and all our family, you know, needs and demands and money, there's never enough, you know, money or privacy or time, you know, our career demands, sometimes health issues, commuting, traveling, you know, all the circumstances of life that demand our attention and resources, and they tend to pull us apart.
So life gets in our way.
That's a good summary.
Yeah. And so life gets in our way kind of both ways, about feeling it and giving it, that two-way street. I'm wondering what else you think really gets in the way.
I would say emotional baggage. You know, things that have happened in our lives that we have not really healed or grown past. It's like when the past is still in the present and it's even writing our future. So all the hurts that we've had, all of the life lessons that maybe we didn't really learn from, the patterns, things like that are, you know, just kind of sum it up as our emotional baggage that was in our past is still right here in front of us and is probably going to write our future.
Well, let's talk about that. You said the past is still in the present, writing our future. What does that mean?
Well, let's take an example where, let's say you were cheated on in some point in your life. Then you may, you know, you may never have healed from that. And you may never have been able to learn from it, like that relationship, perhaps. You weren't able to learn from it, like what role you might have played, for example, in creating that, in having that situation happen. And so there's all of the beliefs, you know, the hurts, I should say, of what's happened before. And it, you just kind of drag it along with you and just sort of hope for the best. But the possibility that you're going to still be believing, you know, holding on that hurt and maybe even treating your current spouse as if they're the ones who hurt you, or expecting that they're going to hurt you, that kind of thing.
What if that person, not in the past, but in the current relationship, that person hurt you? Do you count that as, and that there's something that can shift along with that?
Well, you know, all variations have that. And as we know, there's people come often, you know, to coaching, to the Save the Marriage program and other things because they're hurt. And so let's just say there's been some infidelity in your current relationship. Then, you know, the possibility, first, I just want to say, I have, you know, worked with quite a few couples who have not only been able to get over it, but actually use that as a jumping off point for them to be, any kind of crisis is actually the opportunity for people to get better than they were, to thrive in the present future, not just cope. So infidelity sometimes is a huge kick in the butt that turns out well, that can turn out well, but it doesn't always.
Yeah. And so I guess one way to say this is that what gets in your way is the emotional baggage. And until we unpack it, we are going to drag it around and take it into the next stages with us. What else gets in our way?
Sometimes it's limiting beliefs, either about ourselves or our partner, or all men, or all women. So the ones that really hit a lot is when someone believes I'm not something enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not attractive enough, I'm not thin enough, I'm not successful enough, etc. Put any word you want in there. So you have a belief that you don't deserve to be fully loved as you are, even with your imperfections. We all have them. And yet you deserve to be loved just as you are. And so when we believe that we're not good enough, we act that out. We might even sabotage ourselves.
Yeah, I noticed you talked about those limiting beliefs that you said about yourself or about your partner. And you and I have talked about this before, of the limiting beliefs around the relationship, what a marriage even could be. A lot of people are not even aware of what that should be about. And sometimes it's that their belief is for something that's impossible, that we're never going to argue, that we're always going to get along, that we're always going to be on the same page. And at the opposite end, that, the best you get out of a relationship is to tolerate each other and, you know, kind of limp along. So those limiting beliefs really are those three areas in my mind. You named self, partner, and I'll just add relationship, because I know we've talked about that. What else can get in the way?
Well, undeveloped personal skills. So, for example, not having enough self-awareness or self-management. So if you're very reactive, you have a lot of you don't have much impulse control. You get revenge. You act out of anger. You blame. You don't recognize the role that you might be playing in the scenario or the kind of dynamics between you, where you always act as the victim. So all of those are, you might frame them as self-management skills that haven't been developed yet.
Which raises the question of, so how are we going to learn those skills, develop those skills?
Great question. And, you know, to some degree, you might say it's part of lifelong growth and development. Mm-hmm. You know, we are all always, let's say, needing to grow and stretch ourselves. And we all start somewhere along the spectrum. And the skills that are not serving you or your marriage, let's just say anger, reactivity, lack of impulse, you know, all of those, they are very learnable. And, you know, as if you're going, you know, there's, you think about the skills that you have learned for your life and for your career. They're skills, they're things you have learned. And you could learn these as well, but it takes something to learn them. And because there's emotion behind them, behind the, let's say, the reactivity part, self-managing, like you've talked so much about deep breathing. As an example, it's a phenomenal tool. Just knowing how to breathe deeply and release whatever is causing me to feel upset or triggered, I think that's one of my most important life skills that I have. And I've been nurturing it for many, many, many years. But you can't just kind of do that once or twice. It's an ongoing life skill. First of all, you learn how to do deep breathing properly, and then you practice it intentionally for at least 40 days, every day, a couple of times a day. And just that will help with a lot of impulse control.
So a lot of that we're talking here is habit management, you know, how we break the bad habits and build the new habits. And so now I'm going to throw you a curveball. Mm-hmm. we talked early on about what do we want in a marriage. And what we want in a marriage is to be accepted who we are, how we are. Mm-hmm. And you and I are now talking about how you need to grow, you need to change, and you need to take some undeveloped skills. So how might, if somebody's listening going, wait, you just said that I should have this self-acceptance, and now you're saying I got to change, how do you hold those two together?
So first of all, you actually mentioned more about self-acceptance. I had been talking more about spouse.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. So you want to be accepted and loved for who you are. Yes. And there's who you are, and then there's how you behave. Your actions, your attitudes, and all of those are areas for growth. If you're, so sure, some, you know, your spouse may just accept you for who you are. You may not have as much self-respect and self-love as you might need, and sabotage yourself. So it's really both. We want to be accepted even with the areas of life that we have not yet developed. But the intention to bring your best self into your marriage is, I think, a very important intention.
Mm-hmm. I think this is an interesting one because I think people do an internal struggle with this, that we all do desperately want to be accepted, mm-hmm. which I think you, I love the phrasing. You said who you are versus how you behave. We all want to be accepted, but that doesn't mean that all of our behavior is always acceptable, and that what we're talking about really in showing our best self, you know, I do think we all have this core place of ourselves, core who we are, core identity. And then, um, and then how that expresses itself, I guess, is the question, whether it comes out in good ways or ways that hold us back. You know, I always think of those places that are our greatest strengths also are our greatest weaknesses, hold us back. And so someone who is a very strong, I'll take care of myself, ends up being a very stubborn, you can't help me if they're not careful. And somebody who is a very loving, supportive can become very needy on the opposite end of that. And so what we're really saying kind of is that there's the core self and then those pieces that may, and if I can even borrow some other pieces of what you've already talked about, be bound up in the unhealed past, that there may be some pieces of our core self that are continue to be emotional baggage, caught up in our limiting beliefs, that could be better coped with better developed personal skills. How's that pull it together? Okay.
Yeah.
So what are there other pieces that we didn't leave or other places you think we need to talk about? What else gets in the way?
Yes. And these are some things that I will be talking about in more depth in just a couple of minutes. Undeveloped relationship skills. And, you know, so before I talked about undeveloped personal skills, lack of self-management. And now I'm talking about undeveloped relationship skills, especially lack of emotional safety.
Okay.
So, you know, if you ask, you know, what is emotional safety? It's when both partners trust each other enough to enable, you know, each other to be vulnerable and open about what's so for them, what's going on, what their needs are, especially their needs that are not being met. So creating enough emotional safety, you know, and part of that is giving each other like benefit of the doubt. So if your partner is criticizing you in some way or upset about something that happened, to be listening from a mindset of my partner loves me and wants the best of me. Now, that's kind of benefit of the doubt. They don't want to hurt me. Maybe their skills, maybe my partner's skills aren't the best. Maybe they're criticizing and blaming me. But bringing some benefit of the doubt to, you know, I know you're a loving, caring person. I know you want our marriage to work is very, very helpful instead of always thinking perhaps the worst of me.
Which is really this intersection between my own undeveloped skills, my own wounded places, and the relationship itself. Do I believe that a marriage is there for mutual support? Is there for us to hear each other out? Is there to not wound each other? That starts from there. So then the relationship, undeveloped relationship skill builds on that. Is that fair?
Very fair.
Okay.
Yes. And another piece of the relationship skills that need to be or can be developed is stepping out of power struggle into becoming a we. So a power struggle is you versus me, my needs versus your needs, as opposed to our needs. How can we both get our needs met? So whenever, and, you know, I would say that 99.9% of couples go through the power struggle stage. And you start in that honeymoon, incredible love stage, and then you move into the power struggle stage. It's a natural stage of evolution. But it's also, and it's where every couple who's struggling or divorced, they never get out of the power struggle stage.
Yeah, I was about to say 99.7% get into it, and at least 50% don't get out of it. And I say at least.
Exactly. Yeah. And just, you know, just for couples to know that there is a stage beyond that. You know, I like to call it the bliss stage. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but you're out of the power struggle and you're into a stage where you really honor each other and you're in connection. There's a high level of connection and co-creation of the relationship. And so that is on the other side of the power struggle stage. But most people don't know that there's something to work towards. So if you can get out of, and how you get out of power struggle is what we do in coaching. You know, it's what your programs are all about. And, you know, it's really what we do in coaching.
Yeah, it's the third option. I always talk about that third option, you know, and so many times when we get to that place in life, there's almost always that third option when you go, gosh, you know, there's a winner and a loser on this way and there's a winner and loser on this way. There's usually that third option. And for me, at least in a marriage, you is one option. Me is the other option. We is the third option, which brings in creativity and does break the power struggle in lots of ways. That bliss stage, you know, I've talked about that as a kind of the intimacy place that often comes. And this is the surprise for people. It comes on the backside of the empty stage, you know, and the struggle stage. So as I kind of talk about that, there's the pseudo intimacy where you pretend that you're all connected, which usually doesn't survive much past the honeymoon if it's made it that far. And then you get to the next place, which is that place of struggle, of conflict. And that struggle and conflict is pure power struggle. I want what I want and you want what you want. And then we get to the emptiness place, which is I don't know how to get what I want and I don't know how to get what you want. And then you get to this bliss stage, which is a great way of talking about it because you have to go through the pain, the emptiness stage to ever see the edges of that. So one way of stepping out of that power struggle is looking for the third option. Are there other pieces of that?
Yes, definitely. So, first of all, to hold a mindset of curiosity. Wow, we have these patterns between us that don't make either of us happy. What else is possible? How could we learn how to meet each other's needs? So it's a growth mindset. I know you talk a lot about growth mindset. So power struggle is also a lot about fixed mindset. It's this is the way it is, or, you know, there's stuckness. And when we bring curiosity both to life, like what could be possible here? And how could we both get our needs met? You know, relationship curiosity, you know, opens the door to that. And then there's, you know, what you actually do. So in coaching, you know, it's phenomenal to have coaching. I've had coaching for my marriage and it's made a huge difference, Making, so what's possible, stepping into, you know, curiosity and wanting something better, wanting to step out of. So learning, there's a lot of skills that could be helpful to you. There's mindset shifts. There's just learning, you know, by reading new paradigms like the, you know, the five love languages. You know, you highly recommend them. So do I.
One of the things that I notice in this, and this is a model that I think is important. Some people say, well, okay, what do I get out of a coach? You know, you're just going to tell me what to do. And there's a model that has been developed over a long time in lots of different disciplines. It's called the action reflection model. And I find this to be a place where I see breakdowns on both sides. Sometimes people come in for coaching and all they want to do is reflect. Yeah, they keep telling the story. And I think what they're really trying to do is get the coach to say, you're right, you're the victim. There's nothing you can do. And that's the reflection. And then there are those who just want to act. And they keep doing that, they keep doing it, they keep doing it. And it doesn't matter. You know, that practice makes perfect is kind of the mantra that we grow up on. And we forget that really perfect action makes perfect. Yeah. When you keep doing, it's, I always go back to those, sports analogies. If you keep swinging at the ball the wrong way, you're going to perfectly swing at it the wrong way. You're just going to get really good at doing it that way.
Right.
And so what we were talking about in this model of how to use coaching is action reflection. So the coach may say, hey, why don't you try this? And you go do the action, and then you come back and you reflect on what happened, not as an end point, but as leading to the next place, the step into something better is what you phrased it. And all of that is all about learning. And it's all tied together by the fact that you got to believe that there's something else, this curiosity. You know that I had a conversation with Nida last week, but you haven't heard it yet, so you don't know that we talked about curiosity there too, that's such an important part of the process. If you can't say, I wonder what this relationship could be, I wonder how I could step more fully into this relationship, I wonder what the next place is for us, you are stuck. And what I appreciate for both you and Nina is that both of you are about what is the other possibility? What's at the end of the wondering? How do you get to that place? Mm-hmm. Okay, so how else, any other places we step out of the power struggle, or are there other things that are in our way?
Well, just to add a little bit more to what you just said in coaching, what we do is, or I may ask the couple of questions such as, if your marriage were exactly the way that was so satisfying to both of you, what would it be like? You know, and I listen for what is it that they really want? And then we look at the gap between where they're at and where they want to get to. And so in coaching, we put behaviors and perhaps mindsets and skills into play to start bridging the gaps between where they're at now and what it is they really want.
And that is a powerful question, because it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about that limiting belief. Yeah, usually I think we all have carry within us some place of what could be for ourselves and for the relationship. We may not be able to see, past the next two or three steps, but we usually know that the next things we want. And sometimes it's the fear of claiming that comes out of that question.
Mm-hmm.
Great question. So let's pose that as a potential question for somebody listening to this to go, what is it I really, really want? And how far am I from that? And if you're far from it, it's a good time to say, maybe someone can close the gap. Maybe someone like Annette could help me close that gap with a little bit of coaching. Okay, so we've talked about...
Can I stop you?
Yeah,
here
go ahead.
A second?
Mm-hmm.
Just if you don't mind, just a little tweak of what you were saying. When you said, how can I get... what I want, and to frame it in terms of the relationship.
Yeah.
How can we, if we had a marriage we were both really satisfied with, what would it be like?
That's it's a great reminder. So many times we have people who are coming with a spouse who isn't interested. And so I always am thinking about what is that individual saying, but that is, there are two pieces to that. One is to reflect on that as an individual, what would be satisfying for us. And two is to reflect on it as a couple, if they're working on that. So thank you for rephrasing that. Okay, so after stepping out of that power struggle, what's the next piece?
Well, there are the skills. Yeah, the actual skills to effective, I'll frame it within communication.
Okay.
There's lots of other skills. And there are roadblocks to loving and effective communication. Communication is one big piece, of course, in the us or the we. So I would like to, give you some sense of roadblocks that you may have, and perhaps a bit about what you can do about them. But I want to frame it also because I can hear people when I talk about some of these roadblocks, you may say, well, that's not my fault, but that's what my spouse does. And you may feel a bit like a victim of your spouse, your spouse's behavior. Because we all have these patterns until we learn how to grow out of them. So I would like to offer that if you feel, and here I'm framing this within non-abusive relationships, where both people really want to have a better marriage, they just maybe don't have the skills or the mindsets to do it. So I'm not referring to abusive or really dysfunctional relationships. That's a whole separate conversation. And coaching may not actually work. You know, you have to be fully responsible for yourself and how you behave in order to benefit from coaching. So when I talk about these roadblocks for, and you think it's your partner who does that, I'd like you to, and even though that may be really, really valid, but for you to have more power or opportunity from this is for you to think about each one of these skills to really look at, well, in what ways might I do that as well? Because when you can own it, like recognize yourself and own it, then you have power over yourself. It's a great opening for you to change what you're doing that may be having, you know, negative impact on your own relationship. And secondly, think of roadblocks as opportunities. So there's, you know, what each of you may be doing, but roadblocks can be opportunities. Let's just put it like that.
Okay, so, and I certainly believe that. I think every struggle has within it great opportunities. So, every roadblock is not the end. It's the opportunity for growth. So these skills to effective communication. I think I like the fact that you're talking about the fact that this is not for abusive relationships, first of all. And second, that at least to ask the question, how does this apply to me? Instead of my spouse needs to fix this, how does this apply to me? Makes it completely useful to anyone listening because they don't have to sit there and go, there's nothing that can happen. You're now pointing to, now what is the opportunity? Okay, so what's the first skill?
Well, creating emotional safety.
Okay, so
emotional safety, as I was saying before, is where you both feel able to say what's important to you, what you really want to be understood. So let's say it's a concern of yours about your partner's behavior, or let's say it's a need of yours that's not being met. Then, the ways you express it, express whatever you're concerned about, are ways that allow your spouse to really listen and not get defensive. Now, I get that some people, especially because of the patterns between you and the dance you two have been doing, the dynamics between you, no matter what you say, you know, it could be that your partner is going to be defensive. I get that that could be there. And a way to help with that is actually to frame what you're hoping to get out of. Like I will often say to my husband, something like, you know, I really want to get back to the place where we both felt so loved, cared about, respected, and appreciated. And this issue is kind of in the way. I would love it if you could hear me because that's where I want to get back to. So you frame things in terms of a mutual goal. And then you speak about what's so for you. I feel disrespected when you do this, or I would love it if you did that. So you're asking, you're speaking up for yourself, but you're creating safety for your partner to be able to really hear what's going on for you. And you're letting them know, what is it that you want?
So many times, the opposite is where people are, because the woundedness is there. And so they say, you never listened to me. You never wanted to do anything with me. I don't think you want anything to do with me. You're coming at it from the opposite. You know, one is to, it creates a challenge for the other person. And whenever we're challenged, we tend to defend. And so what I just said creates defense. What you said, the way you phrased it, was, I would really like to get back to a place where we're connected. Not, I want your attention, but where we are connected. You're claiming it for yourself, but broadening it out to the relationship. What could we get out of that? Which is a powerful communication skill. Just that one little piece to be able to reframe it from what you're not doing for me or what you're doing to me to what I would like for us to move to. Mm-hmm. And then to say what you see is going in your, getting in the way in a non-judgmental way.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Other pieces to add to that one?
Yeah. This is more about adding emotional safety, mm-hmm. is repair, mm-hmm. attempts at repair. And there's a lot of research about this, that couples who have a lot of arguments, let's say, there many, many, many of those couples actually say that they are very happy. So it's not that you argue that is the problem. Of course, how you argue is, you know, definitely there's a lot of research about that, and we know what makes arguing either effective or makes things worse. But ability to repair. So if, let's say it's you who have been created a lot of defensiveness, or let's say you've been blaming your partner a lot, and you recognize that you've been doing that, and you might say, you know, I notice, I realize that, you know, how I speak about what I'm upset about might be making you defensive. I think I've been kind of on the attack, and I've been blaming you, and I really am sorry about that. I don't want to do that anymore. And then there's a whole piece, because you likely will fall back into that trap of doing that again. Because we know that when you want to change behavior, you have to repeat that new behavior like 40 times at least, or you have to, you know, be intentional on changing that. Put it at the, you know, at the forefront of your, you know, your mind, so that you can do that even for little things. But attempts at repair, so your attempts to repair the parts that you can take ownership for. Like, yeah, I've been doing that. Apologizing. And then the other side of that is accepting repair attempts from your partner. So when your partner has tried to make things better in one way or another, and you blow it off, to really notice if you've been doing that. And, you know, so then you might say, you know, I think you've been trying to apologize, but I haven't been really listening, or I haven't been giving you benefit of the doubt. So both sides of that, of attempting to repair your part. And, you know, just to say a little more about that. So sometimes, you know, when my husband and I have had upset, the one who's been the jerk, I might be feeling that in a particular situation. But I can see maybe 5% of my responsibility. Yeah, I did goad that a little bit and goad him on. I did do that. I'll just apologize first for even my small part. You know, and I won't say it's small or big. I said, Yeah, I can see how I caused this to escalate a bit. I see that I could have done that better, and I can just, I'll apologize for my role, even if it was a very small role. And then as soon as I do that, my husband will then apologize for for the 95% that he totally recognizes. He'll call himself a jerk and whatever. And then we can laugh about it. We can talk it through and it's over with.
So part of what you just named is the importance of apologizing and forgiving. Those are the two ends of that, apologizing and forgiving as the two ends, and that you're not apologizing to get an apology. You're apologizing to claim responsibility. Otherwise, it becomes manipulation. And so what you're doing is making it as a clear a place where you're willing to apologize and you're willing to forgive. And by the way, forgiving doesn't require the other person necessarily saying, please forgive me. That can be an independent process. Hopefully it goes together. But those pieces are – so one is to repair. The other is to look for repair, to take the opportunity for repairing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
Mm-hmm. And this also is about vulnerability. We were talking about creating an emotional safety, and that's really what happens in my own marriage. My husband is not usually the first person to apologize, and I used to find that very annoying. Even if I thought he was really the one. But if I really own my own role in it, I create a little bit of vulnerability. But this is authentic. Again, this is not manipulative. I'm willing, even though I would find it annoying initially that I was the one who always had to start the repair process. But at the same time, I recognize, hey, I have a tool here. I have something I can really do that can start getting us back to a good place. And I say back to, and as soon as I said the word back, I realized, I don't want to say that. I want to get us to a better place. And there's even growth. I found that, my husband and I don't have a lot of upsets anymore. We really don't. Thinks it's so much easier to be loving. And, we love that. And we don't do a lot to undermine it. But when it happens, when something happens, that I have a tool that's really effective, even though I'm the first one. I've given up on caring about that. I have a powerful tool, which is ownership and apology. And it makes it safe for him to recognize himself in it. And then he will absolutely apologize for all of this stuff. And then we actually end up laughing about it later on. And we can actually say, look how fast we get over things now. And we'll remember, we take all the drama out of it. And we can remember back when an upset take us days of coldness, to get over. And now it's about, 5 or 10 minutes. Or maybe I'll want to sleep on something. And then the next morning, that kind of thing. But it's so much easier now because there's so much safety between us.
One of the things you said in there was that it gave you something to do. And so many times, I know you hear this too, so many times people say, there's nothing I can do. They need to take action. There's nothing I can do. And what you're naming is a place where you can do something. Not have to, but you can do something. This is the choice to make of saying, I get to take some responsibility in this interaction. And communication is always a two-way street. And so barring the abusive relationship that we've already kind of set to the side, there's always a place that you can say, okay, where do I need to own my part of this?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the larger vision of what kind of marriage do I want? Mm-hmm. What kind of experiences do we both want? Mm-hmm. So I always keep that as kind of my North Star, where you know, being loving, caring, authentic, safe, you know, all those things. That's what we want. And so that is what guides both of us. Hmm. It's not ego and drama that ultimately drive us. Sometimes in the moment, there's some of it. But ultimately, we know how juicy it is when we're great together, that we are 95% of the time now. Now, that's after 44 years of marriage. You know, it wasn't always that way, but it's been a lot of growth towards this.
And let me just say, it doesn't take 44 years necessarily to get there.
No, no, it doesn't.
You've just proven it over 44 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's so much easier now. So we're in that great place where 98% of the time it's just juicy and wonderful. And then once in a while we have stuff, but we have great tools and mindset that really help.
So that's speaking of the stuff, what's another roadblock to the communication?
Mm-hmm. Not speaking up for yourself and what you want and being assertive for your needs. So on the one hand, there's the expectation of mind reading, that you expect your partner to know what's going to make you happy. Now, there is viability to that because over time you get to know each other well and you do have a sense of what might make your partner happy or satisfied in the situation. But bringing curiosity to it is, you know, because we're always growing. You know, we're always hopefully growing and learning. So never expect that your partner fully knows exactly what's going to make you, what you need in a situation or what's going to make you happy. I used to fall into that a lot. And I remember my husband many years ago saying, you know, I want you to be happy. Just tell me what it is. I can't read your mind. Oh, that I needed that like as a clunk on the head. Yeah, so now I tell him, you know, I love it when you do X. I used to love it when you know, so those are some of my favorite things that I will let him know what's really important to me.
That is a powerful point. You just named, I think, what so many people forget in the midst of a crisis, that spouses really do want the spouse to be happy. What gets in the way of that is the woundedness, the hurt that can block that out. But that's even a point of saying, okay, I'm going to trust that. I'm going to trust that. And to ask yourself, do you want the best for your spouse, as a way of unlocking the fact that if you do, they probably do too. Even if you're feeling like, you know, they owe you or however, whatever's gotten in the way, which really is the hurt getting in the way. Generally speaking, people marry people they want to see the best of. And yet we forget that along the way, as you note, that that's one of those places that might be a useful shift just to assume that.
Mm-hmm.
And then move from there. So, okay, so let's say you're assuming that your spouse actually does want you happy. You added that the block is not speaking up for yourself, not standing for your own needs.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get around that roadblock?
Well, speaking for yourself in a safe way, in a way that creates safety. So you speak up for yourself, what it is that you want and need. And I gave a couple of examples before. I love it when you, I wish you would, I used to love it when you would, or when you do X, it makes me feel Y. So when you walk away from me and spend the whole evening with your buddies and don't talk to me all night at a party, I feel a bit abandoned. And I would love it if you would introduce me to your buddies or talk about me or bring me over.
So I'm just going to highlight those once again. So, you know, there may be these are good post-it notes. I love it when blank. Mm-hmm. I wish you would blank. And by the way, tone is important. Just listening to your tone, you said it lovingly and lightly, but clearly. You know, you could say, I wish you would, and it's not going to be nearly the same as, you know, I wish you would. You also said, when you do X, it makes me feel Y, also neutral tone. And the last one was, I used to love it when, fill in the blank. Great opening, rather than you always, you never, and you're a jerk.
And, you know, as you were, when you were talking about tone, these are not demands. If you're demanding or expecting and then testing whether your spouse is doing them or not, that doesn't usually work well.
So let's call them an imitation.
An imitation?
Invitation.
Oh, invitation.
You're inviting your spouse.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're giving your spouse important information on what would make you feel happy, safe, included, connected, that you're giving your partner information. And then it's up to them to choose to do it or not do it. So there's no demand in there.
Okay. Third roadblock?
Misperceiving or misinterpreting what's happening or what's being said. So, for example, let's say when your partner, your spouse, let's say you're a stay-at-home mom or you're the one who's home with the kids, at least, you know, after work, you're doing homework with the kids and you're cooking dinner, etc., and your spouse comes home from a hard commute and hard work and then walks into his den, his cave, or whatever, and hardly says a word to you. You know, I can absolutely understand the feeling of that, of feeling abandoned, taken for granted, etc. But the feeling about that is not necessarily the truth. So when you misperceive, like I had a couple that I worked with about this very issue, and what was going on for him was that he didn't want to poison the air, you know, for his wife and children because he had such a horrible day. He was feeling bummed out, taken advantage of at work, minimized. You know, he had his whole experience of what was going on at work and you know, horrible commute. And he was just feeling, you know, venom, not towards his wife, but venom towards his life. And he felt like he was protecting them from all of that. So he needed time in his man cave to just chill for a while. And then he was ready to come in connect. But for her, her story, and I don't mean there's not some validity in this, but when a story becomes the truth, that's when it's going to be a roadblock. Mm-hmm. So her story was, he just takes advantage of, he takes me for granted, he doesn't love us. Whereas when we work together, you know, he loved them enormously, but that was not the time that he was able to share that with him. So when you're misperceiving or misinterpreting and creating some truth, like he takes us for granted, he doesn't love us, those are things, those could be roadblocks. Mm-hmm. And instead to perhaps bring some curiosity, I wonder what's going on for him. So he needs an hour to chill. And then he comes out and he's in a better state. But because she's had her story about it, then she gives him the cold shoulder all night. But after some work together, like, oh, you know, she was able to bring some empathy oh, I'm so sorry you have to do all this, you know, put up with this crappy stuff in your life for us. You know, what can I do to make this easier, that transition between commuting and home easier? I would love it if you gave me 5 minutes and then maybe came and, you know, rubbed my back for a few minutes or told me that you love me. And that, you know, just those little things made such an enormous difference.
Yeah, this reminds me early in our relationship, I had the habit of assuming that if my wife was in a bad mood, I had done something wrong. And what often happens, and this is part of this misperception and interpretation, is we almost always misperceive things because we are applying them to ourselves all the time. You know, I'm seeing it from my frame. And so she's in a bad mood. She's upset about something, which didn't necessarily happen very often. But when it did, I was trying my best to fix everything. And I remember one time she said, look, just because I'm upset doesn't mean I'm angry with you. I'll tell you what, you can always ask. And I said, okay. And if you could also tell me when you actually are angry with me, then I won't make that assumption. And so I started doing that. And you know, if she was upset, I'd give her space. And I remember one time she walked in and she said, I've got to tell you, I am upset with you. You know? And I was going, oh, I had no idea because I had gotten into a new perception. And so there is that balance point. But the starting of the balance point is almost always in not assuming that we're the bad guy all the time or not assuming that it's our fault. And instead of assuming, to ask the question is so important. So creating empathy by bringing curiosity can lead to a very gentle question. If you're assuming that something is wrong, that you've done it or that they've done something to you, now you're headed for a roadblock just because it never got checked out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do we want to go on to the fourth roadblock?
Sure.
Okay.
Shutting down or shutting the other person out. So first of all, there's a dynamic between two people that's well known. It's called talker-thinker. And the talker is the one who always wants to talk things out right then and there because they think best when they're talking. But then the thinker is the person who needs to process internally. And I actually tend to be more of a thinker myself. I don't need to talk things right out. I need to sit with it, maybe journal a bit, maybe go for a walk and just let it sit for a little while, whereas my husband wants to talk things out, you know, right then and there. And, you know, so we've really learned about this dynamic. So we've worked with it in a way that actually can work, you know, and does work for both of us. But that's a dynamic that so the talker is always wanting to talk things out, but the other person isn't. And then they physiologically need time to chill and process it. And this is that's a perfectly healthy model or need. But it doesn't usually work very well. But if the talker really understands that they have this need, then but the thinker will be, you know, kind of shutting the other person out. And that drives the talker more crazy.
Another layer to this is John Gottman talks about one of the signs of trouble is stonewalling. And there is a difference between stonewalling and processing. Stonewalling is shutting down the other person. And that's not the same as what you're talking about, this dynamic. Someone who is a thinker is processing, not disconnecting.
Right.
They're processing usually so that they can connect. You know, they have some way. So you're processing how you want to respond to the situation. It's not you, I'm going to take a walk and never talk about this again. It's I'm going to take a walk, think about it, let's talk about it then. And those can look very similar if there's not some communication about what's going on. Stonewalling is, I just am not going to talk about what you want to. I'm not going to talk about your emotional upset. And so there are two ways the shutdown can happen. It really can be a shutdown that is a true roadblock. It can look like a shutdown, but it's really mm-hmm. that processing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so for the thinker, they're most likely not going to, but I want to encourage them to communicate and say, I need time. I need to think about this. I need to process this. Can we sleep on it? Or can we take some time? Now, that takes a lot of self-management, because it could be that the thinker is dealing with a lot of emotion, or they're dealing with, you know, very uncomfortable feelings. So it does take something to be able to stretch toward your partner and say, I need some time. But you must have integrity to go back to it and say, okay, now I'm ready to talk about it. You're not just shutting out the conversation completely.
Yeah. A thinker can be overwhelmed very quickly by a talker, and mm-hmm. a talker can become the chaser with a thinker.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a model that I use. If you think of a spectrum with talker on one side and thinker on the other side. So let's say right in the middle is zero, where you're maybe some of both. And from 1 to 10 is different levels of being a talker. And let's say between 1 and 4 or 5 are within the healthy realm. They're your normal nature, but they're still within functional, healthy ways of being. And on the other side of the spectrum is 1 to 5 of the thinker, where you need to process things within yourself. And then you might be ready to move towards the talker. But when the talker goes from, let's say, 5 out to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, they become what we call the tiger or the pouncer. There's some other names for that, where you're sort of attacking your partner. Because if your partner is processing and they're not communicating, then the talker is going to get increasingly, you know, upset and demanding more and being louder, maybe name calling, maybe yelling, maybe screaming. So let's just say on that spectrum, you go out to an 8 out of 10. So you are out of what I would call the healthy realm. You're being the tiger pouncing. Because, and I understand, because your needs are not being met, but you're in an unhealthy realm. Your partner is most likely going to become an 8 in the thinker realm. So that would be someone more stonewalling or in their cave, and you're totally unapproachable. So if you can keep your models within the healthy realm of like 1 to 4 or 5 of your needing to talk, but getting what your spouse needs, and the thinker of needing to process, but remembering what your talker spouse needs, then you're moving towards each other and towards need rather than out to the peripherals of that to unhealthy realms of that spectrum.
Great. That's, and which really clarifies for some people what's going on in their relationship. If one is the talker, the other is the thinker. And by the way, those are not these and the, as you said, that's a spectrum. So you're not one or the other. You live on the spectrum. But if there's a mismatch in anywhere, I've seen people who can be both on the thinker side, just one so much more of a thinker that they get lost, or on the talker side, where one is still going to out-talk and can be overwhelmed. So to think about that spectrum is an important part of being able to just claim that's the dynamic. It doesn't mean we're dysfunctional communicators. We just have this roadblock to learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's a fifth roadblock.
Yes. Not taking responsibility for your role. We've talked about this. I talked about this a bit before. So when noticing how you create the lack of safety, for example, you know, what role you have played in some negative dynamic. And we don't think of it in terms of blame or blaming yourself. Think of it as, how can I behave as a positive force for that loving marriage that we both want? So it's, you know, if you think of it almost like a power tool in your garage, you know, like a saw or something, if you get hurt using it, you know, you could blame the tool, but, you know, will that help the situation? Or you could say, wow, I really need to learn how to use this tool safely and effectively. And one of the ways of going back to communication is, I need to learn how to take responsibility and ownership for it and not just blame my partner.
That one piece ties all of those together. Yeah, you might notice, as you said, how you don't create safety, how you create a lack of safety. You may notice how you are not claiming your own needs and speaking up for those. You may notice how you are creating a story that becomes the truth rather than building that curiosity and creating empathy. You may notice that you haven't taken or become clear about your communication pattern of the talker-thinker pattern. And all of those are wrapped up in the fact that you can keep pointing to your spouse, as Annette, you talked about early on, or you can say, where do I fit in each of these processes? All great reflection places. So now let me just suggest that if you've been listening and you're going, wow, that's us, we've hit that obstacle, we are stuck, coaching is a great way of reflecting on that. And I will go a step further and say, if you're stuck here, Annette can help you through that process. Annette is on my team because she is such an excellent coach at helping people get beyond these obstacles, at getting beyond the roadblocks and getting back to what Annette often calls the juicy relationship. And so let me invite you, if you find yourself stuck, this is a great time to say, you know what? I need a little help with that. Annette can be reached by just emailing Annette@savethemarriage.com. And all you have to say is, I heard you on the podcast, I need some coaching, and Annette will reach out to you and talk about how you could set that up. That would be a great way of finding the way around the obstacle and getting back on path. Any final words, Annette?
Yeah, it's been really wonderful. And I just really want to honor all of you who are listening to this, wanting to have a marriage that you're both happy with. And I would love to serve your marriage and help you get to a great place together. Great. It is possible.
Thank you, Annette. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Bye.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.